welcome to our discussion of Hakel, the gathering of all of Israel. Parshat Nitzavim Vayelech, particularly Vayelech, mentions the mitzvah of Hakel, gathering all Jews together. Let's examine that mitzvah. What's the purpose of it? What is it? What did it look like in those days? And what could it look like today, or could it be today? In fact, could we still do this mitzvah of Hakel, of gathering all Jews together? So let's take a look at the presentation we put together. So, gathering of all of Israel. Here you have a wonderful picture. Welcome, Suzanne, here. Wonderful picture. I don't know if it's completely accurate, but you have the king reading from the bima, from a high place, and in the women's section, the women are located on the balconies above, and that's where we get the idea of separate seating. It all comes from this Hakel ceremony. Good afternoon to Diana and Devorah.
Hey. Good to see you.
Same here. And you see a large gathering, a lot of people coming, maybe the Kohanim, other people, gathering to hear the Torah being read by the king in the Beit HaMikdash, in the Holy Sanctuary. So let's take a look at the Parsha and what it's all about. But before we look at that, I wanted to just ask you, when people do get together like that, of course, sadly, you know, this is like, it makes you cry when you see this because you can't even see your kids, you know, and these people are gathering with thousands of people. But when you see something like this, right, probably Sukkot, or this, the stadium just last January 1st in New Jersey, people from all over the world. I almost went myself, but I was busy, wasn't able to go. I've gone many times to this. I went twice, two other times, to the Siyum HaShas. Actually the first one I was participating in, but didn't make it. But it's a lot of rabbis and a lot of Jews gathering to celebrate the completion of the seven-year cycle of the Daf Yomi, the daily page of Talmud. About 60,000, 90,000 Jews, Lian HaRaken Yerbu, gathering together in New Jersey. Where you see this picture of the Bell Synagogue, one of the biggest synagogues in America, certainly Orthodox synagogues. It's synagogues in the world. It's a synagogue, the Bell Synagogue. It's somewhere near Ramot or something in the Belzer neighborhood there. And it's called the Bells Base. I think that's a beautiful building. I was there once. And you see all these people. So how does it make you feel when you see all that? If you were there, or even just looking at it, how would it make you feel? How does it make you feel looking at that picture? Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about gathering all of Israel. So what does it feel like when a lot of Jews get together?
It's wonderful.
Beautiful.
It kind of makes me miss, you know, it's hard to be Jewish alone, I feel like. I don't know about anybody else, but just hard to not have the community like we used to with these times going on.
Makes you sad to think about the how we miss, you know, being with other people. Yeah. The support, right? You're not part of some little mini cult that's in the recesses of some neighborhood in Memphis, Tennessee, but you're part of something. Everybody, you know, it feels like everybody's into it. It's very affirming, you know, feel connected to all the people.
So, well, it's something to look forward to.
Yes, yes. It's a major gathering every 7 years that you look forward to.
Something to look forward to.
Yes. Actually, the Siyum HaShas also has become every 7 years. It's interesting. It's not per se, you know, calibrated according to the official Shemitah, according to the Shemitah or sabbatical year cycle. Of the original Hakel, but turns out it's also every 7 years. So yeah, it's something people look forward to. You know, it's almost like I'm looking forward to the next one. You know, I missed the last one. Maybe I can make it to the next one.
When is the next one? Do you know off the top of your head?
Yeah, 7 years from now.
Like it just happened? Oh,
just happened last year.
January 1st, yeah.
Oh.
We had our own little seum at the shul with a few hundred people, but it ain't the same. But yeah, it makes us miss it all. But there's something else to it, and we'll come to it in a minute. So
it makes you feel connected.
Connected to what?
I guess to the Jewish community as a whole, because especially during this time when we're isolated in our own homes, but because as Jews you don't need to be even around 10 people to say a lot of prayers, you know, so that every 7 years you can get together with your, with people, with your own kind, and be connected to the Jewish community.
Yes, it definitely connects you to other Jews. That's true. If you look here at the AIPAC convention, also a gathering of about 20,000 Jews, it's also become a type of hakel. You know, I see there are certain relatives that I only see them at the AIPAC. I see them every year. But AIPAC this year, it's canceled for this year. But
it looks like unity to me.
But yes, a lot of unity. Good. So there are all these feelings come to play. So let's look at the context before we get to the actual verses that speak of this, the actual hakel. Let's look at this. I don't know how your screen, you can move your, if you see the, you see me, you see everybody else, and you see the text, and you can't see the text, you know, you can move over the speaker so you can see the text. Anyway, so what's the context? Moshe says, look, I'm 120 years old today. I can't come and go anymore. Even though it says later that he really didn't lose any of his vigor, but you know, I can't do it anymore. And also God told me I'm not going, so I'm not coming. So it's Moshe's leaving, and then he says you got to have a gathering every 7 years to get everyone together with the leader. So what does that mean? What does that mean? He's dying, and he says every 7 years you have to get together to read the Torah. What is he saying? Here's one more verse of context. Moshe called Yehoshua and he says, you know, be strong. You're going to take the Jews to Israel. And then every 7 years, you got to get together and read the Torah. What is Moshe really doing?
Don't forget the Torah after I'm gone.
Good. It's a way of remembering the Torah. So, you know, it says that Moshe is the one who commanded it, but I mean, we view it as a regular commandment like any other. So, because in Devarim, Moshe said all kinds of things, and the rabbis say that God agreed with him. Whatever he said in Devarim, that's a mitzvah. So, of course, he got it all from God. So he's telling them, you got to get together every 7 years. Very important. Good. At the end of the 7 years, now you could say at the beginning, at the end, I don't know. It's hard to interpret. We'll see in a minute.
Can I ask a question?
Let's just finish the verse. At the time of the sabbatical year on Sukkot, so that would seem to be on the seventh year on Sukkot, but it says at the beginning, the end. So the rabbis interpret that it's really, we'll see in a minute how, but it's actually the year after the sabbatical year. You finish the sabbatical year, you didn't work the whole year, and then when it's all over, you have Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, you come on Sukkot to the Beis Hamikdash. We'll see exactly which day of Sukkot. Yes. Tova.
Is there a reason why that's done at the Sukkot?
Oh.
Is there a significance of that?
Okay. So think of some of the words you said before. Sukkot is the most what holiday?
What holiday?
It's the most fill in the blank.
Joyful.
So, yes. And you said before unity. That when you saw this, you felt joyful, right?
Yeah, joyful.
So anyway, right. Do we know anything about unity and Sukkot?
Yeah.
What?
Exactly. That's with when you have all the, you know, the lulav and everything, and correct. The aspar together.
It represents everything together, right? All different Jews. Right. There's even an idea that everyone could be in one sukkah. Well, generally we have different Sukkot, but you could all be in one sukkah theoretically. We ask God to put his sukkah over all of us. Sukkah really means God's protection. We're all under God's protection. So so there's joy, right? It's also everyone has to come anyway. The men have to come anyway, the boys. So once every 7 years, you say, look, I know the women and children, it's hard to travel with, you know, with all the kids. But once every 7 years, the women and children have to come anyway. Very often the women came anyway every 3 times a year, but they didn't have to. It wasn't like it was obligatory. But every 7 years, they have to show up with the babies, with everybody. Because you want to have, you know, it's not that massive gathering if you don't have everybody, you know, and all the joy, the children, the small children, babies, the girls, whole family, is a special joy. So, that's good. A good question. Why Sukkot? Good. And why the sabbatical year? Why after the sabbatical year? What is that? How does that help us after the sabbatical year? Anybody?
Well, Jubilee, isn't it? like a jubilee.
Well, so every seven cycles after the sabbatical year would be the jubilee year. That's true. But in the other years, it would just be the eighth year. Or the 15th year or the 22nd year. Yeah. But how do you feel after sabbatical year? Sorry?
Seven doesn't kind of represent completion?
They say eight represents completion. It's actually, according to the rabbis, it's on the eighth. Okay. Right. But after you've done the Shemitah year, the sabbatical year for the year, how do you feel? How are you feeling at that point?
I'm a little tired after everything, because it's like holidays, big holidays, one right after the other, kind of.
You're coming in and out a little bit. I couldn't hear every word. Say again?
Can you hear me now? Is it okay?
Yeah, maybe text it also. Go on.
Okay. Okay, I'll text it.
Okay.
You feel renewed?
Good. Renewed. It's a new cycle. You took a vacation. Now it's back to work, right? Right? So there's a certain renewal. That word is going to be important, a renewal. Good. What else? Let's see. Where's Brittany's text? Not yet. Okay. So he tells them after this, the end of the seventh year, and the holiday of the Shemitah, at the time of the Shemitah, on Sukkot. When is that? So we'll find out later. What's the mitzvah? The Torah goes on. The vocal Israel, as everybody comes, when everyone's coming, right? Because we know that everyone has to come on Sukkot. So when they're coming anyway, Brittany was saying you feel refreshed. Good. When everybody's coming to see God, right? Because in Sukkot, Pesach, Shavuot, and so you have to come. You should read the Torah. Who's he talking to? You should read the Torah. Who's Moshe talking to?
Everyone.
Well, that's one interpretation, but you can't have a million people reading the Torah. You would gather together, right? So he told them, he instructed them. It doesn't say, but the previous verse says Moshe called Yoshua, and he said in front of all the Jews, be strong, you're coming to Israel, right? And then he said, he told them, the end of 7 years, read the Torah. So we'll see in a minute. Maybe it's the Levites, right? So is it everybody, the Levites? So it's a little bit ambiguous, but he's talking to Joshua. What's he?
Was it Cohen?
No. He's from Ephraim. What's his role?
Leader.
Yeah, the leader. So the leader should read, right? Sometimes they have a king, sometimes they don't. But now, in front of all the Israel, Bill's name in their ears, like that they should hear it. Akeladam gathered the people. Ha'anashim. What does he mean by people? Ha'anashim, ba'anashim, atzat. There's no exceptions here. The women, and the babies. Now, how far do you take that? Is it really under bar mitzvah? I think the rabbis say, no, it's everybody. Why? Let them experience it. Let them come. We'll see you later. The Gerachashim, also the converts as well. Strange, maybe the strangers, maybe those who have not completely accepted Judaism, but they accept it partially. They don't want to worship idols anymore. They have to hear. We want them to hear. We want it's for the purpose of them hearing and learning. There's two different things, hearing and learning. And to fear God. Because what are they reading, right? Reading the Torah. So they'll know how to fear God. Right? And they will learn all these words. There's an idea from the Rashbam that when you come, it says every time you come to the Beis HaMikdash, you fear God. So the question is why? So he says, when you see the Kohanim doing their thing, and the Levites doing their thing, and Israelites praying along on the side, you begin to say, hey, you know, this is inspiring. So, and then they'll keep the Torah. So the bottom line is they listen, they learn, and then they keep all the words of the Torah. You read the Torah, so they'll keep the Torah. Pretty straightforward. But why? The verse goes on, why should you read this? And their children who did not know, they should hear and they should learn to fear God, the Lord your God, all the days that you're living on the land you're going to inherit. So the whole purpose of it is to fear God. There's a certain fear. You could say that when Netanyahu says, you must lobby for this, or, you know, the Rebbe says, you have to learn Torah. So everybody, is trembling. or they read the Shas. Maybe everyone says, "Oh, I got to start the daily page," or you stand over here, you say, "No, maybe I need to be a more observant, religious. Maybe I need to be closer to God." Right. So there's a certain fear factor as well. Now, then the question is, so this is a detailed question for a second. Bear with us. That is, when? When is it? So, so we say over here, the Bechor Shor, Yosef Bechor Shor, we like to quote him. He was a very important Spanish commentator in the days of the Tosfot after Rashi. And he says, French commentator, he says, when everybody's coming on Shemitah, they come, they all come to the regel. Everybody shows up. You see, you're supposed to show up every Pesach and Shavuos and Sukkot. You think everybody came? Attendance was sporadic. No, but on the Shemitah year, they all come because they're not busy plowing and stuff. They don't have that many fruits to guard. They don't have to reap. So they come because they're more free. As Rashi explains, they're still free after the Shemitah year too. Why? It's the first year of the new Shemitah year, the eighth year. That's based on the Gemara and Sota. Why? Why does it call the Shemitah year? Because the laws of the seventh year still apply. The harvest of the seventh year's produce, when it goes forth and takes place in the year following the Shemitah year, you see, into the when you go the harvest at the end of the year, you still can't harvest it because it was part of the previous year. So they're still in the Shemitah year. As long as you're still in the Shemitah year, in the sabbatical year, you're more free to come. People are on vacation, they can get there. Okay. You know, it's like the beginning of the vacation, you still have your mind on everything, right? But by the end of the vacation, you really have a clear mind. I don't know if you ever experienced that. That's my experience totally. So the beginning of Shemitah year, you're not so holy. By the end of the Shemitah year, you're in vacation mode. You're ready to come to Jerusalem. The Kliyak, Rabbi David Zvi Hoffman, says as follows. Says, the Torah doesn't say which day of Sukkot it is. But we learned in the Mishnah that they did it on the first day of Chol HaMoed, the first day of intermediate days of Sukkot. But we learned that it, on the Megillah that if the first day for the second day falls on Shabbos, they would do it on the second day of Chol HaMoed. So it really didn't matter; it could be on the first, second, third day. Some say the first part of Sukkot has to be at the beginning of Sukkot. The Kliyakar was a Polish commentator about 300-400 years ago, and he said, we need to understand the reason for this mitzvah. He says, through this, everyone hears together all the sections of the Torah, the main sections, we'll find out which ones later, which help the fear of heaven take root in us, in our hearts, and we'll start thinking about how we accepted the Torah at Mount Sinai, and we said, Naseh v'nishma, we will do and we will hear. And everybody will think about this in their heart. And it turns out that this reading is similar to the reading of King Josiah and Ezra and Nehemiah as well. So we need to take a break and remember the story of King Josiah. King Josiah lived in a period when Jews were frolicking and worshiping idols. So he brought everyone back to Judaism. And he read they lost the Torah, so they found the Devarim, and they brought it out, and they read it. And everyone's like, wow, look at that. And he got rid of all the idols. So, and the same thing happened in Ezra's time. He read the Torah in front of everybody, and then they all said, hey, you're not supposed to marry non-Jews. We didn't know that. And everyone was crying, and everyone was going crazy. And so it's the same idea that the king should read it. In fact, the Talmud says that's how we know the king should read it, because look, Josiah read it. Look, Ezra, who was the leader, he read it. Nehemiah, they read it. So, it serves a similar purpose to remind everybody, hey, there's a Torah. Don't forget what's in there. Everybody said, whoa, you're not supposed to mix linen and wool. You're not supposed to. You're supposed to send away the mother bird. I didn't know that. I forgot that. So it's sort of like that. But he mentions that it reminds us of Sinai, right? Right, so how does this remind you of Sinai? How does that remind you of Sinai?
We all gathered to receive the Torah at Sinai.
Right, so it's like redoing Sinai. So Kliyakar mentioned. Let's see if anybody mentions it before that. Who reads it? So Rabbi Yosef Hoshea says, look, we said at the beginning that this whole section was after Moshe turns to Yoshua and says, look, you're next. I'm going. I'm dying. You're taking over. And he says, gather the Jews every 7 years. He's talking to him. So that's why the king would read it, because he's just like Joshua, the leader. However, yeah, and Rashi says, the king read from the beginning of the section, and these words are as set forth in the treatise Sotah. We'll see later, they didn't read the whole Devarim. They didn't have any more patience then than they did today. You can't read a whole book. I mean, if you have very religious people, they can get together by volition and read the whole Devarim. I think I've done that. But they didn't. They only read certain sections. The famous sections that we tend to read. Anyway, so we'll see later. But Rabbi David Zvi Hoffman was a German rabbi, and he was a little more scholarly, so he picked up Josephus, and it says in there in the Antiquities of the Jews that the high priest would read it. The high priest would read it in front of the people on a big podium. He says, what are you talking about? The Mishnah in Sotah, the Mishnah is also around the time of Josephus, and they said the king read it. They even have a story that Agrippa, the king, Agrippas, he stood up and he was reading it, and the rabbi said, great job. But then when it said in the Torah, you're not allowed to have a non-Jewish king, he started to cry because he was from Hardus, and Hardus was a little bit Edomite. So they said, don't worry, you're our brother. And some people say that they made a mistake. I mean, that's not, he's not really their brother. I mean, he was right by crying. It was. But anyway, the point is that it was clearly supposed to be the leader, whether Agrippa should have read it or shouldn't have read it, but it's supposed to be the leader. So the Talmud says it's the king, and Josephus, who's not very rabbinic, he says it's the high priest. Well, guess what? Nitziv was a Rosh Yeshiva in Valozhin 150 years ago, and he said, it doesn't have to be the king. Whoever is the biggest person. When they didn't have kings, the high priest read it. And that's why he told the Kohanim also. This whole section is told to the Kohanim. When they had if you have somebody greater than a Kohen, like a king, so in the days of Joshua, they had Joshua. So he would read it. So it's interesting that Yitziv unwittingly agrees with Josephus, who wasn't exactly a rabbi. He was more of a traitor. But in any event, the Ralbag also, earlier, Yitziv lived 150 years ago. Ralbag lived 800 years ago, 700 years ago. And he said he should read the Torah, the Melech, or the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, or the leader of Israel. Because that's the person they would honor. And so it's like sort of like Suzanne is right. The Jews should read it. But who gets the honor? Well, whoever, you know, who gets the honor in the shul? Whoever, you know, gives the biggest donation or something. You know, whoever's the leader, the president, the rabbi, you know. Right? So too over here. You have 500,000 people. You give it to the leader. If you have a Kohen Gadol, you have a king, whoever it is. So he is more fit to be the prophet, and he worships God, and since he's the one who teaches Torah, Yorush Vedar Yaakov, there's an idea that the high priest, the priests, the Levites, they're supposed to teach the Torah, as it says in the end of the Torah in Parshas Zos HaBracha. So since he's supposed to teach the Torah, whoever's most appropriate to be the mouthpiece of Torah could be the high priest, whoever it is. Mishnah and Sota goes through the elaborate the service. Who wants to read that for us?
I'll read.
Great.
At the conclusion of the first day of the festival on Sukkot, I can't see it. Sukkot on the
eighth day. You may have to move the camera apart. You can just put your cursor on it, move it to the top. Oh, and you can also press, there's a little blue box with a, don't press the one with three, press the one with one, and then you won't see it so much. Go on.
After the conclusion of the sabbatical year, they made a wooden platform for the king in the temple courtyard, and he sits on it, as it is stated, at the end of every 7 years in the festival of sabbatical year. Deuteronomy 31:10. The synagogue attendant takes a Torah scroll, gives it to the head.
In the Beit HaMikdash, they also had some kind of attendant taking the Torah scroll. There was, you know, just like we have a gabbai and a president in the shul. They had the same thing in the Beit HaMikdash. Go on.
Oh. The synagogue attendant takes the Torah scroll and gives it to the head of the synagogue that stands on the Temple Mount. And the head of the synagogue gives it to the deputy high priest, and the deputy high priest gives it to the high priest. The high priest gives it to the king, and
so it's very ceremonious, right? It's a very ceremonious. It's almost like they do at the temple. You know, they pass the Torah, you know, right? It's a very ceremonious ceremony. Go on.
And receives the Torah scroll and reads from it while sitting.
Generally, no one can sit in the Beit HaMikdash, even the high priest. But one exception is the king.
Oh. Do you want me to read more?
Yes, please. Oh, 1 second. Go on.
Where'd it go? Oh. Whoops. Where'd it go? Oh. King Agrippa arose and received the Torah scroll and read it from it while standing. And the sages praised him for this.
I think they were saying that he's not really a king, so he can't sit. Go on.
Oh. And when Agrippa arrived at the verse and the portion read by the king, it states, "You may not appoint a foreigner over you." Deuteronomy 17:15. Tears flowed from his eyes because he was a descendant of the house of Herod and was not of Jewish origin. The entire nation said to him, "Fear not, Agrippa, you are a brother. You are a brother."
Whether that's correct and whether they should have said that is a different question. Go on.
Yeah, kind of interesting. The king reads from the beginning of Deuteronomy, from the verse it states, and these are the words, Deuteronomy 1:1, until the words, "Hear, O Israel," Deuteronomy 6:4.
So those are all the admonishments at the beginning of Devarim. That's all the admonishments at the beginning of Devarim. And then they skip. Then he reads,
"Hear, O Israel, and it shall come to pass if you'll hearken." Deuteronomy 11:13-21, "You shall tithe." Deuteronomy 14:22-29. "When you have made an end of tithing," Deuteronomy 26:12-15, and the passage concerning the appointment of a king, Deuteronomy 17:14-20, and the blessings and curses, Deuteronomy 28, until he finishes the entire portion.
Yeah, so it's interesting. It's very interesting in terms of what Hakel is. It's admonishments, like, hey, you know, don't forget, you guys, you know, you have the spies and the golden calf, and, you know, you should keep the mitzvot. You got to be careful. Don't forget the mitzvot. Don't forget God. You know, stuff like that. And, you know, Shema Yisrael, Vayayim Shamo, the second paragraph of Shema. If you don't keep the commandments, you'll be chased out of Israel. And then the only mitzvah that it mentions is the mitzvah of tithing. and then about the king, because the king carries the Torah with him and the king is reading it. And also the blessings and curses, you know, with last week's parsha, that, you know, if you do this, everything will be great. If you don't, everything will be terrible. So that's, you know, a reminder of the covenant and really perhaps a remaking of the covenant every 7 years. Thank you. So what's the point of it all? So the Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch lived in the 19th century. He said as follows, German: "Mitzvah zo shukis haTorah." This reading of the Torah is not just to help them know the Torah, because the mitzvah of learning Torah is every day. That's part of our daily life. It's not like once every 7 years we find out what it says in there, right? Whether you're sitting in your house, you're going, well, you should always teach your children. So rather, this is something above the daily life. And it's something for a specific purpose. What's the purpose? It says the nation, through its highest representative, reads from the Torah in front of everyone gathered. And that, with that, he will, I mean, here he echoes some things you've said already. He announces constantly, once again, in a fresh way, with the beginning of the new agricultural cycle and the business cycle, right after the sabbatical year, that the way to God will be found only through the Torah. That the covenant with God is the covenant with the Torah, with His Torah. That the Torah is the condition for the achdut, for the unity, which you guys spoke about, of the nation. And for the protection of God for it. And that this nation, which is in charge of guarding the testimony of the Torah, we're the witnesses, as we said the other week, we are a responsibility for its truth and for its roots in God, of the God of the Torah. So the godly roots of the Torah. So for him, it's about renewal, It's about the renewal of a new cycle, starting off a new cycle on the right foot, and remembering that the Torah is the key thing for our unity, our success, and for our mission. Couldn't be more clear than that. But it's not about learning Torah. And that's why you bring the babies. Say, what are the babies doing there? They don't understand what's going on. Some people even question whether the women in those days were educated enough to know what was going on. So you say, whatever, they can still listen. It's good enough. And the children, certainly, some of the children are way too young for that. They just come to be inspired. Okay. The Samuel Shmuel Hirsch continues. I'm sorry. So that was that. We read that. Yeah. Also, the participation in this big gathering will be a good influence on the small children, particularly. Even on the particularly small children, and its imprint will be felt by them later on in life. So again, when you gather at this kind of gathering, you bring your kids to this kind of thing, right? Right? You bring your kids to that or this, right? The influence is there. It doesn't matter if they know one word of what's being said. It really is not about that. Okay. So that's the Absence of Fellowship. Rabbi David Zvi Hoffman, again from Germany, he says, we need to understand this mitzvah. The reasoning of it, through the fact that the nation is all together, they hear the words of the Torah, the main parts of the Torah, which give root to fear of heaven in their hearts, they will start thinking about how they accepted not submission. But yeah, we said this before. Good. The Rambam writes that it's a mitzvah to gather all the men, women, and children every end of every seventh year, as they're going to the Beis Hamikdash for Sukkot anyway, and to read the Torah, certain sections, which encourage them in mitzvos and strengthen their hands with the true faith and the true law. So the idea is, and that's why we read those sections that encourage. The beginning of Devarim is not laws, it's encouragement. Hey, you know, you did the golden calf, that wasn't good. You didn't want to go to Israel with the spies, that wasn't good. You got to come to Israel. Look, we already conquered some nations. We're going to conquer more nations. You got to don't forget God like you did with the golden calf. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Don't forget the covenant, right? So this, it's Mizar Zodotam. What does he say? It will urge them to perform the precepts and encourage them to cling to the true religion. Okay? So it's all about encouragement, according to the Rambam. Again, according to Rosh Hashanah, it was about recreating Sinai. We have a lot of different interpretations here of what it's all about. The Sefer HaChinuch, a student of the Ramban, we don't know what his name is, but he explains the roots of every one of the 613 mitzvot. And he says, the essence of Israel is the Torah. It's like the Rav Samson Baal Hirsch. And with that, we're distinct from all other nations. And with that, we'll go to the heavenly place after life. And it's and therefore, since that is our essence, we have to gather at a certain time to hear the words and to have those words come out from within the nation of men, women, and children to say, what is all this great gathering? What is everyone getting together? And the answer will be to hear the words of the Torah, which is our essence and our glory. And it will come from that to tell about the greatness and the glory and the value of Torah. And they'll put it in their hearts, a desire. And with that desire, they will learn, right? If you go to the Siyum HaShas, you don't learn anything. The speeches are in Yiddish. You can't hear anything. You're busy eating the popcorn, right? You don't learn a thing. But when you hear the Torah reading, right, you don't really learn that much. But when you're going to desire to go and learn more. Many groups of Talmud study began after they went to the Siyum HaShas. It's inspiring.
So I have a question.
Yes.
How did everybody hear it? I mean, you're talking, you know.
Right, that's why it doesn't matter.
Seven, 8 million people.
That leads me to the following story. One time, we're going to see in a minute that there's a connection between this and the Torah reading. So one time, there was a Bal Kori, there's a Torah reader, and he was reading. He didn't have a good voice. So he was reading the Torah, and nobody could hear. So some of the hecklers in the back, they said, Hecher, Hecher, louder, louder. So Rabbi Soloveitchik turns around, I think Rabbi Soloveitchik's father, grandfather, his father, he turned around and he said, who said you have to hear the Torah? You have to experience the Torah. We're not here to hear it. We're here to experience it. So if you're hanging on the rafters and you can't hear a thing, and the king has a bad voice and there's no microphone, right? It's fine. It doesn't make a difference because we're not here to learn anything. That you can do every day. We're here to experience. So it's an excellent question. And thanks for the opportunity to tell that very important story. So if that's true of the Torah reading, it's even more important, even more true here. It's all about the desire. According to the Sefer HaChinuch, it's about knowing the Torah is at the center and creating a desire to learn. And then we'll know that with this, we'll have good things will happen. It's good for us learn the Torah, to have the Torah. Okay, here's the words of the Sefer HaChinuch in English. Right? It will come from this to tell the great praise and splendor of its value, and the learning will enter all their hearts. This yearning, it will learn to know God and merit God. And God will be happy with his creations, like the matter that is written, explanation of this commandment, in order that they will learn to fear the Lord. Okay. The last couple of weeks, we've been reading Rabbi David Kochavi. I thank my sons, Sher and Tani, for bringing this book to my attention. It's Sefer HaBatim is something I learned for many years, but I didn't realize he wrote a book on the 613 commandments, and he explains every mitzvah. So I plucked out a few things he says about this mitzvah. He says, Ba mitzvah zu'ach ha-shemitah. It comes, you have to do this mitzvah after the sabbatical year. Sh'az kilo nitchadesh lehem sma. It's like there's a renewal. Who mentioned in Britain? He said, the renewal of time. And it's as if nitnalem ha'aretz atah. It's as if the land of Israel was given to them right now. Now they can go back and plant in this land. It's a new gift. Because during the Shemitah year, the land belongs to God. So on Sukkot, which is a time of joy, that answers, I think, Devorah's question, why is Sukkot a time of joy? They should read the Torah as if they, it's as if they renewed the time of the giving of the Torah. Getting the Torah again, etc. And then when you think about all the things that they hear, it'll encourage them to the true Torah. There he's citing the Rambam. And then everyone will listen with great trepidation, and they'll ask the sages and they'll explain it to them. And even the great sages, they have to listen to with great intent. And I think that in order to stir up the Jews, Moshe instituted the Torah reading on Shabbos. That's what the Talmud says, that Moshe instituted the Torah reading on Shabbos because it's a day of rest, and on holidays, Rosh Chodesh, and Monday and Thursday, so we shouldn't go 3 days without Torah. And the Torah reading is a stirring to keep the commandments. And that's why you're not allowed to talk at all, even about Torah, during the Torah reading. So everyone will focus on the Torah, except for those who, like, you know, they only learn Torah 24/7. Maybe they don't have to hear the Torah. Everybody else cannot talk. Got to focus on this. He says, Ibn Ezra says on his commentary to the Ten Commandments, that we saw that this sabbatical year is like Shabbos. And therefore, God commanded us that we should read on this sabbatical year, which is like Shabbos. And so they should learn. And Shabbos is in order to think about God's creation and learn Torah. That's what he claims, is that Shabbos is to think about creation and to learn Torah. And we should have to be rejoiced in God's creations, because the whole day, week, you're busy with your needs. And on this day, you should be by yourself and rest for the honor of God, and don't engage in anything or even thinking about what you should be doing. And that's why we read the Torah on Shabbos. Now, so we basically explain the mitzvah of Hakel in a variety of ways. Is it about encouraging us? Is it about recreating Sinai? Is it about being inspired? Is it about getting more desire and yearning for it? Is it about encouraging? Is it about recreating Sinai? Is it about creating an impression in the young people? Is it about the essence of the Torah being the centerpiece? Is it about renewal? We've given many different explanations. But now, this is a more practical question. What about today? It's a mitzvah in the Torah to gather every 7 years. Why don't we do it? So there was a rabbi in yeshiva.org who explained three reasons that you could object to doing it today. Number one, it says when they all come to see God at Sinai, at the Beit HaMikdash. We don't have a Beit HaMikdash. Nobody's coming on Sukkot to see God. So then maybe it doesn't apply. Also, we're impure, so we can't go. The Rambam specifically mentions that if you're impure, you can't go. Even though you might say, well, you got to gather together. Maybe there's an exception. He says, no, the Rambam says you can't go. And then if you need a king, so then we don't have a king. Of course, we showed from a number of sources that you don't have to have a king. Whoever's the leader, chief rabbi, whatever, be good enough. Maybe the prime minister. Also, you're supposed to do it after Shemitah. We don't have Shemitah anymore. It's only rabbinic Shemitah. We have Shemitah as a sabbatical year. It's only rabbinic law. But some say, no, the counting is still rabbinic. The only objection here that makes any sense is actually the first one, which is what? That you need the Beis HaMikdash. You have to read it in the Beis HaMikdash. Short of that, it doesn't really work. Part of the inspiration is being in the Beis HaMikdash. However, there have been attempts. Rabbi Bila writes, I think you got it from Wikipedia, that the idea of reviving the mitzvah of Hakel in modern times was first proposed by Rabbi Eliyahu David Rabinovitz, who's known as the Aderes, the Tomim. He published two pamphlets on the issue, Zecher LeMikdash and Davar Vito. And Rabbi Shmuel Solange was the chief rabbi of Jerusalem. He would gather all the Talmud Torah students in front of the Western Wall, the Kotel, on the first day of Chol Hamoed Sukkot and read the same passages the king would read. First official ceremony was held in 1945. And there's a new film upload from the Spielberg collection of the Hakel celebration in 1966 with Zalman Shazar. They couldn't go to the Kotel in 66. They didn't win the 67 war yet. So they went to Har Tzofim, the Mount Scopus, and they could see from there. So let's take a look at the ceremony as it appears there. Let's just read a little bit more first. Special service was held in the Yeshuan Synagogue, which became sort of the main synagogue in those days, after which a mass procession proceeded to the Western Wall. The Torah portion was read. Similar ceremonies presided over by the Israel government have been held every 7 years since. The Hakel ceremony conducted in 1994 was attended by the chief rabbis of Israel, presidents of Israel, and other dignitaries. The ceremony performed at the Western Wall in 2001 was led by President Moshe Katsav. He was, unfortunately, he was disgraced, but he was originally a religious Jew. I guess he is. And Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneierson, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, urged people to conduct small Hakel gatherings. He was into that. So they got together. They were waiting there. Everyone was together, a lot of people. And they're waiting to hear the, I guess the rabbis are coming, dignitaries are coming to for the occasion, Jerusalem. A lot of excitement. And they all got together. They were walking. They had Israeli flags. And they came over there. A nice little parade. They were walking. And they walked to but a nice Sephardic Torah, and they walk to Mount Scopus, and they walk. In any event, so it's very beautiful. And then let's see the actual reading. Let's see. Here's the chief rabbi, two chief rabbis, Rabbi Unterman and another rabbi we mentioned before. And then they actually read the Torah reading, Rabbi Unterman, another chief rabbi, and also the president at that time, the shofar. There they go. They actually read the Torah with Zalman Shazar, the president. Rabbi Yitzchak Nissim was the Sephardic chief rabbi as well. So that's Rabbi Yitzchak Nissim. That's probably Rabbi Unterman. And we had his granddaughter here not so long ago. It was a very hot day. They read the Torah, and it's beautiful. So there is such a custom, but I'm afraid I have to stop here. I don't have time for questions. I'm sorry, but we thank you all for joining us. If you have other questions, feel free to email me or whatever, text me, and we'd be glad to answer any further questions.